We're also excited about other main chains as well that kind of have the opportunity to start from scratch, not have all of the kind of like almost tech debt of Ethereum.
You're listening to my guest, Devin Finzer, and we get into the rise of decentralized markets, and we talk about going cross-chain with a lot of these NFT-based projects, as well as the future of OpenSea as a marketplace, and what they have coming up next, all on the latest edition of the Stash My Crypto podcast. Let's go! Hey there, crypto friends. Thanks again for joining me. So today here on the Stash My Crypto podcast, I have Devin Finzer on with me from OpenSea. Thanks for joining me, Devin.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be on.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I wanted to connect. We actually had a chance to actually be on a live stream together not too long ago for the Blockchain and Booze event through my buddies Alon and Joseph. But we didn't really get a chance to talk too much, you know, and I've been an OpenSea user for a very long time. I've sold and bought things on OpenSea in this great marketplace. So I thought that you'd be a really great guest here. And so I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited to have you and talk about NFTs and all the great things you guys are doing at OpenSea right now.
Excited to be here. I've actually been a longtime watcher as well and big fan of the stuff you produce. So
thanks, man.
Definitely glad we got to connect.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, you know, I want to start off this convo kind of like I always do in the podcast here is I want to know about that discovery moment for Bitcoin, because I think this is a really interesting story. Everyone has a little bit of a different angle of how they got in there, but then where it leads to and where we are now, I think is really cool. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you found Bitcoin, how you know, where was that aha moment?
Yeah, well, I was a bit of a sort of a latecomer, although so I'd been working in Silicon Valley. You know, right after I graduated from college, I worked at Pinterest. You know, Bitcoin was like something that you read about on Hacker News every now and then.
Right.
And
yeah.
Talked about it, and I'd like followed it peripherally, and I bought a little bit of Bitcoin back. I guess it was like 2013 or 2014, but wasn't like super deep in it. I got a little bit deeper in 2015 when I went to like a couple hackathons where there mm-hmm. were Bitcoin projects there and like got to tinker with things. I think I wrote an Ethereum smart contract, like at a very basic level, but I never like really fell down the rabbit hole, which I'm kind of sad that I didn't, you know, get into it earlier.
Yeah, me too. I mean,
yeah, exactly. But, and I remember even like talking to a friend and we were like, oh, maybe we could do something with like Ethereum smart contracts. And then we were like, no one's going to use that. And I think that was like 2015 or 2016. Then in 2017, you know, it was just like impossible to ignore because everyone yeah. was talking about it, right? Like all the ICO stuff was happening. And so, you know, I think that sort of pushed me beyond just the threshold of like a basic understanding to, you know, actually like make sure I could wrap my head around how all of these systems work. Mm-hmm. you know, understanding Bitcoin at a much deeper level, still not as deep as a lot of folks who are in the space, but like, you know, since I was an engineer, I could, you know, get my hands dirty and start playing around with things. And then that was around the time that CryptoKitties hit. And there was just kind of this nice intersection of, you know, me looking to do something a little more entrepreneurial and on sort of a smaller scale than at my current company. I think the thing that really appealed to me about the blockchain space after I got a certain level of depth was that, you know, unlike other frontier technologies like artificial intelligence and virtual reality and all these really exciting tech, there with those areas, like it wasn't extremely clear to me, still not extremely clear to me why, you know, startups are well suited to tackle artificial intelligence and virtual reality. I think those are like areas where big companies are really nicely positioned. Whereas
they're hard. It's a hard thing to do, man. It requires a lot of stuff, you know. Like you're doing AR, you're doing VR, that's the one thing, but then you get to AI, that's even worse. It's just there's a lot there. So I agree.
And there's not like that, there's no kind of, or it's unclear to me whether there's sort of a disruptive like business model shift with those technologies, right?
Sure.
Crypto, it seems like it's completely turning on its head, like the traditional model that a lot of these companies have around, user data and like access to services, right? So I think crypto is really the one space right now that feels like it's really ripe for like new companies to be built. And we've already seen that happen. Yeah, so that's kind of what excited me about getting involved and deciding to build a company in the space.
Right. So that, I mean, that's a pretty interesting journey. I mean, you were already a tech guy, you know, similar story to me. I was already a tech guy. You know, I've been a coder since, you know, I was 16. I work in the development, industry. I have my own business doing development and stuff. So it was one of those things where it just kind of crossed my path and reading things on forums. And, you know, eventually I did this similar thing in 2013, 2014. I took the dip. Actually, 2013 is when I really like was like, okay, this is cool. And then 2014 was like, I gotta get in. And I was like, right before that Mt. Gox crash was, and then all that happened, it was like, whoa, maybe that was a bad decision. I was like, I'll just leave it there and forget about it. It wasn't that much money to begin with. But it's great when you put a little bit in, you're a little invested. And you know, then I came back around in 2016, kind of a similar way, and was like, hey man, there's a lot more going on. Wow, this is cool. I wish I had jumped more in on the development side versus doing the content creation side. But it was, I wanted to kind of do something different than what I was doing. I was like, I'm tired of code, man. I don't want to look at this stuff anymore. So it's like, I'm going to do some content creation stuff on a personal brand. So, but that's a great story. So what was it that really then drove you towards NFTs and creating a marketplace for them? Because in 2017, that was a pretty new thing still for a lot of people. And, you know, not a lot of people were doing stuff in that realm around that time. So what was it that was a trigger for you that said, hey, you know what, this is going to be big. I want to do this. Or did you not really know? Was it just thrown out like, hey, this is kind of cool. And then, oh man, it turned out to be really good timing and great idea.
Definitely more of the latter, actually. So we, actually the full story is, we applied to Y Combinator with a different, idea. So Alex, my co-founder and I, we kind of knew that, or we definitely knew we wanted to do something with crypto. But we're still kind of like, you're still kind of noobs who were like understanding what was a good crypto idea and what was kind of like a cookie cutter crypto idea that was like, you know, Filecoin for, actually our idea that we applied to YC with was essentially Filecoin for Wi-Fi, which a number of companies are doing now completely legitimate ways. But we're still like figuring it out, right? And so the idea was, could you have sort of a crypto network where you share your bandwidth and be incentivized through a token, which, you know, I think there are a number of projects that are doing this now. But for us, when we were sort of in the winter break before YC started, and we just kind of realized that tackling that problem for us was more about like figuring out like a lot of Wi-Fi related stuff.
For sure. There's a lot crypto. Of,
And so we sort of started looking at other things. CryptoKitties had just launched. We both thought it was like really interesting. Sort of just talked to folks who were, deeper into crypto, and the idea came up of like, you know, maybe there'd be more things like CryptoKitties. Maybe the marketplace could kind of exist separate from the game. And that was just kind of this exciting idea that you could have sort of an eBay style marketplace for digital assets. And that certainly has existed in some sort of microcosmic ways in the gaming world, and actually decently large ways, but it's hard to scale those marketplaces across like multiple games.
The multiple games thing is the big thing, because like CSGO is a massive market. I mean, it's a multi-million dollar market, and there's some other games that are close to that too, that trade really big, and there's huge sites that do millions of dollars. So I mean, you're definitely on the right path with that one.
So we weren't super familiar with like the gaming industry, so we were kind of naive about that. And then we just started, we basically built the first version of it at the time, and you were probably following the space, but maybe some folks who are a little newer might not remember this, but there were like a bunch of CryptoKitties knockoffs. So there was like CryptoBots, Ether Tulips.
There's a bunch, and they're still coming out. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, they've been coming out for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's the same exact concept. And that's just kind of what we see in crypto, I think, in general, is we see a lot of projects mimic other ones. You're like, all right, it's another, like you said, another file coin. All right.
Yep. But what was kind of cool was that, you know, because there were these knockoff projects, mm-hmm. you know, some of the projects launched without a marketplace. And so, you know, sometimes people would invest in these projects or buy some of the assets and then they'd want to resell them. And that's kind of like where we came in and provided this kind of catch-all marketplace for all of these projects that, you know, a lot of them aren't around anymore, but at least it got the ball rolling and mm-hmm. us testing our site and talking to these kind of early adopter users. And then we kind of continued from there.
Crazy. So, I mean, so there you go, man. Stroke of genius and luck all at the same time. Just had great. And you know, to be honest, perfectly honest, I talk, you know, I run multiple businesses. I'm an entrepreneur in a lot of respects. And so I end up being in a lot of like startup situations kind of, or bootstrap situations where I have a great idea or part of a great idea. And people don't realize how much luck and timing really play into an idea coming to fruition and really working out. Because I've seen a ton of projects in crypto, and that's one of the things you were just talking about, how quickly things are moving, how it's a great industry for startup companies or new ideas to really blossom fast. And it is. And so they blossom very fast, but then they also wilt just as fast sometimes.
Yeah.
And so we see that. And so it's a great place for testing, but you know, I think timing and luck are really big factors in this industry, even more than some other industries, because of how fast paced it is, because of how quickly it's changing and developing. And so you had perfect timing, man. And that's amazing. I love that story. I love it. That's awesome.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's still
Come on. Like, this is you're a well-established business now. You know, you're the leader when it comes to, you know, secondary markets for these assets. I think that you've established the well C already. So, you know, I appreciate the humbleness though.
I think we definitely think we're still, well, as an industry, we're still very much at the beginning.
Oh yeah. No, for sure.
We're super excited about kind of the next, next 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's kind of like, you know, I think that when I talk about being well situated, I mean, within the existing cryptocurrency community. You know, obviously there's so much potential out there for people that want to come on board, that are getting involved in new games and things like that. And so, you know, when you talk about some of these things, you know, before we kind of jump in there, I want you to just tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now. And then I want to talk a little about the future. And I have some questions about kind of future stuff, but why don't we talk about a little bit about OpenSea now and kind of how you guys have positioned yourself in response to some of the competition you're starting to see now, mm-hmm. and just kind of, you know, in general, why people are using OpenSea currently?
Yeah. So I guess our strategy has always, or kind of the way that our product has evolved over time, we've always been like kind of the most horizontal focused marketplace. So, mm-hmm. or at least within Ethereum. So, you know, instead of focusing like specifically on a particular type of item, like digital art or trading cards or virtual worlds, we try to build tools that will work for every single type of item. And so sometimes that means that, like, you know, OpenSea isn't the best place for like this particular type of asset, right? If you're trading Decentraland, you know, there are really nice things about OpenSea. You can visualize history, you can look at price graphs and all that, but sometimes you want to be able to like view the map. You know, maybe at some point we'll provide sort of a generic map interface for virtual world projects, but mm-hmm. we tend to do things that like we try to like scale them across every project and have this kind of one unified portal where you can see like pretty much everything. So we're kind of this weird mix between like an Amazon, a Shopify, and a Google, where like you can, it was just, you know, not, you know, as a startup, you typically want to have a little more focus than that, but we're kind of, you know, we're just providing this like, you know, service, where you can kind of find any NFT. We try to, you know, if there's auctions that are happening on other marketplaces, we try to ingest that data so you can see price history. And we're like getting better and better at that over time. And then we also try to have sort of the most sophisticated mechanisms for auctioning your items. So if you want to do like a eBay style auction, you can do that on OpenSea. If you want to sell a bundle, if you want to do a declining price auction, we have all of that functionality. And again, it applies to any type of asset. So that's kind of how we differentiate. I think there's the other area where I would say that, you know, we're different than some of the other marketplaces is we are a decentralized marketplace. So the settlement of orders happens on a smart contract and you sort of bring your own wallet versus more of like a centralized exchange model, like something like Nifty Gateway.
You got to register, you have an account there, they store your data,
right,
et cetera, and et cetera.
They're definitely like, there's great benefits to that model. There's kind of benefits to both, right?
I mean, I prefer the decentralized way, obviously. I mean, that's what we're here for. You know, it supports the ethos of why I'm here. You know, a lot of people have different reasons for being here. I think, you know, many people is just like, oh, I'm going to make money. You know, I'm going to get rich quick. And I'm not really here for that, you know. But in general, I think that, you know, it makes sense to be decentralized. And in particular for these types of things, you know, having a decentralized format where it's, you know, you're not giving your assets up, you're not giving up data, you connect your wallet, which you're in full control of, and your assets are always in your wallet until they are making that immediate transfer through the contract. So why would you do it any other way, man?
Yep, exactly. Well,
you do it another way if you're a big centralized platform that wants to have reins on things, you know?
I think that's fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, we can be honest here, man. We can be honest. the twins are going to come after us. Maybe they will. Who knows?
Yeah, I think like one challenge for DEXs right now is like is just the throughput of the network, right? So
yeah,
you know, unfortunately, and this is a challenge for kind of Ethereum as a whole. But you know, if you look at like recent gas prices, and you're trying to buy items that are, you know, maybe just a dollar, you're often paying dollar in gas. So I think there are a lot of scalability challenges that remain unsolved for DEXs. We're hoping to kind of benefit and help out in that territory. Like already just kind of having the hybrid model that we have with off-chain orders. So, you know, not having to submit a transaction every time you put something on sale, but then only submitting a transaction when
it's actually being settled a trade.
That helps a lot. But I think, you know, there's As DEXs continue to kind of be more useful for folks, I think it is going to be a challenge to see whether that model like can work on Ethereum, or you know, whether people move to other chains, layer two solutions, all of these kind of underlying currents.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, you make a good point there, but also your marketplace is a marketplace more than it is an exchange. And so I think that you have an advantage in that respect, because you don't have to have people always on there making orders, and you know what I'm saying? And so you know, you can come to OpenSea, have your account, you get, and then people can bid on your stuff, even if you know, like it's just there and people can bid on it. Like I get lowballed all the dang time, man. I'm like, man, there's gotta be some noobs out there that are falling for some of these lowball bids that these guys go around doing. And I'm just like, oh, come on, man. Seriously? Like, why? You know, it's like this asset is clearly valued at like $30 and the guys lowball me at like $2 in some random currency. But I mean, I love it. I love the fact that you can do that. And I think that actually gives you an advantage over the problems that like what we consider a decentralized exchange has. Because obviously the biggest one there is a lot of times liquidity. There's just not enough people trading on there. But with OpenSea, it's a little bit different because you have all these assets that can be just sitting around and they're not currently being pushed on chain data. So you don't have to worry about the fact that you have all these things that people are bidding on, but they're not necessarily pushing data back. So you're not tying up the network, you know, you talked about scalability in Ethereum is a pretty big problem. And maybe that kind of brings me here to some of my next points is that when we talk about the scalability in Ethereum, everybody knows, anybody who's working within Ethereum knows that it's an issue. We all know it's an issue. It's like the white elephant in the room. Nobody really wants to talk about it. But man, that damn elephant is huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I obviously do a lot of interviews with projects, mostly focusing on NFTs and gaming and stuff. And so I talked to them about some of their solutions, and a lot of people have kind of their own thing going on, kind of building independent solutions for scalability within their own networks and platforms. what kind of ideas or how do you see that, you know, that problem playing into the future of OpenSea and really hitting a mass market? Because we really can't get to something like, you know, a million TPS a day on a platform like OpenSea unless we have that, because it's just going to clog up the entire network. We see right now, even gas prices right now are horrific, and it makes people not want to trade. So are you guys working on some of that stuff? Like, how do you see that as a bigger picture here in the future?
It's a good question. So we've chatted with a number, we've chatted with a lot of different teams across the board in terms of mm-hmm. like layer two scaling solutions, like Sparkware, Matic, mm-hmm. implementations, optimistic rollup. And then we've also chatted with other layer ones, just completely different main net chains where people might be deploying NFTs.
Right.
And we're interested in both. I think personally, I would love to see I'm not like extremely well educated on layer two solutions. So maybe a lot of this has changed over even just the last couple of weeks. Personally, I would love to see a solution that makes it relatively painless for dApp developers to scale like their existing or perhaps slightly modified smart contracts Ethereum in a very generic way. So I know like this is kind of the dream of optimistic rollup, is that, you know, you wouldn't have to like recode your smart contract, or maybe, you know, even more excitingly, slight modifications, or even something at the sort of smart contract wallet layer. Like if you had a wallet that kind of had layer two scaling baked into it via optimistic rollup, that would be really interesting for us, because then, you know, that can sort of be the responsibility of the wallet. And
interesting.
Yeah, I'm not like, maybe I'm being a little bit over optimistic about those types of things, but I do think that that's sort of the territory of optimistic rollup. And I'm excited about that. I don't know when like that is all going to come to fruition. And then there's, of course, like the Ethereum 2.0 roadmap. It's a little bit hard to track exactly. So I do think there is this big risk for Ethereum that, like, you know, we won't solve all of those problems soon enough because, you know, we're already kind of hitting the edges. So we're also excited about other main chains as well that kind of have the opportunity to start from scratch,
right?
Not have all of the kind of like
limitations and stuff,
backlog. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the like almost tech debt of Ethereum. So we're for us, like we're kind of investing in, or we're starting to invest in making us less sort of Ethereum specific. So just like
that was kind of my next question where I was getting with this, is it, if that was also a thing on there, because there's definitely other chains you could be looking to. And I think that makes it's a natural transition, you know. Build out on Ethereum, robust, people trust it. You want to be able to support other chains, which I think just makes sense.
Yeah. And I think, I do think that like it's possible, and we've already seen it. Like I think application layer companies, will like sort of for the time being be tasked with the responsibility of abstracting over the main chain layer and like being sort of, you know, for us, for example, being a marketplace for digital assets on blockchains, not a marketplace for digital assets like on Ethereum specifically. Right. And I think that's possible for dApp developers to kind of make their infrastructure generic enough that like they can kind of flexibly, you know, it's not going to be dead simple for us to move between chains. It's going to be pretty complicated. But I think that's kind of our responsibility, is to make that a little more opaque to the end user and just have these like user-owned digital assets. So
You're right, you definitely want to make it as opaque as you can to the user with all that stuff going on in the background. That's the whole point of really building great things on top of anything on blockchain. And that's, you know, that's where I think a lot of people miss the mark. A lot of projects kind of miss the mark on that, moving to a different chain or supporting different chains obviously requires quite a lot of back end, because these things are compatible. But I think that's where we're kind of getting here, and what I think a lot of like newer, what I would call it, like kind of like 3.0 blockchains are kind of at, you know, Bitcoin we would consider like 1.0, Ethereum was like 2.0 of blockchain, and 3.0 is kind of like EOS, WAX, kind of like those variants. And we're really even getting like the fourth gen, I think, of blockchain stuff, of where we've learned all these lessons, and we're starting to learn pretty quickly now in succession, learning what doesn't work as more ideas roll out on top of these things. And we learned, like, you know, with with dApps. Like, well, Ethereum, it's great. It was the number one thing and it was where people started building. But now that we see there's issues with scalability, and now that these, you know, third generations have come out and they're like, oh, we've solved scalability, but there's other issues, you know? And so I think that, yeah, we're going to get there where these chains are being built, where we have industry standards that they're all complying to try and be able to have that interoperability. That's a huge missing factor I see in this industry as a whole. And there's a couple of companies trying to fill that gap, but it's just not, they don't have the support that they need across the board yet. But having industry standards that can be incorporated across every blockchain project is really difficult right now, because everyone is vying for their thing to be the standard, right? We're that early in this, in this industry. It's just like the internet when it was really first getting started, you know, I was coding in the 90s and that was still after the game. But when you look at when things were starting to get going, everyone wanted their, you know, everyone has, there was different protocols, and it's like, well, what's going to be the main one? What's going to win out? And we see things like, you know, HTTPS winning out, or HTTP winning out, you know, and things like that. So I think that we'll see standards pop up that we'll build on, but we're still so early right now where everyone's fighting for them to be that standard, because they know that means a lot of control within a massive network like this. And we see that still. And so it's something we have to all deal with as developers, unfortunately, and have to find ways around it, solutions.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think you guys are in kind of that same boat there with trying to figure that out and knowing that, you know, I think you guys are at this growth point, right, where you want to get to these other chains, but it is a difficult thing. And so have you guys identified maybe like the next chain that you're actually going to go after? You can drop it right here. And if you've not told anybody, it's okay. You can tell us. You can tell Stash and the Stash Club community, and we will keep it under wraps at least for like a few hours or so.
Well, we're still like, we have some in the works, but nothing announced at the moment. And we haven't, we're still pretty early in the development process, but we're excited about all of them. Like, I think we've been impressed with what Wax has done with securing the Garbage Pail Kids IP. I think that's super cool. Flow, I think, is launching relatively soon with their NBA Top Shot game. It'll be really interesting to see what they do. I think also like another kind of arena that I'm excited about is kind of these chains that are moving a little bit more slowly, but trying to kind of build things and less focused on bringing apps in early on, but more focused on kind of the like specifics of the development environment. So like Tezos, we've talked to a lot about their standards for non-fungible tokens. They were very thoughtful about how they architected it. I've always been a big fan of Cosmos, although I haven't been following the project as much recently, but I think the vision of kind of having this stack that you can build up of your own kind of application specific blockchain that interoperates with other chains is super compelling, and like a really, you know, I think that model makes a lot of sense to me in terms of how, you know, much further down the road we have this kind of scalable ecosystem of blockchains. It's just pretty early on in terms of that like coming to fruition. So we're basically watching everything. We've talked to a good number of projects, and we'll see which one ends up being kind of the first one that we launch on.
Well, there you go. Wax, Tezos, and no, I'm just kidding. I'll come in OpenSea soon, and Cosmos. I think that, you know, that interoperability is something a lot of people really want. And yeah, that's where we're starting to see more projects really deal with that problem, because we're starting to realize, oh man, that's actually a much bigger problem. A lot of times when we talk about scalability and things like that, then a lot of people may have realized. And now we have multi-million dollar companies being built on Ethereum. I mean, this is the case. People are getting, you know, VC funds and rounds of investment that are in the millions. And there's a lot of money on the line right now. And so scaling, I think, is a big solution. But, you know, obviously being able to work on different chains is also a pretty big one too. So I'm glad you guys have both of those things in mind here for the future. Now, talking about future stuff, immediate stuff, which I want to talk about a little bit sooner, but you guys just announced a new thing called Drops on OpenSea. And OpenSea Drops is kind of like this whole creator thing where you guys are going to do limited edition drops, right? And it'll be for like limited time. So tell me a little bit about that and how that all came about.
Yeah. So basically, we kind of realized that a lot of people were launching their projects on OpenSea already, but there wasn't really a good way for folks to kind of like you know, find out about them or like, you know, come and have a sort of an event around when the project's launched. So, you know, people would kind of launch a rare auction for a piece of art or something like that and tweet it out. Maybe we'd help like retweet it and stuff, but it was something that it was pretty hard to discover. And generally I think like we want to add a lot better like discoverability features for OpenSea, but that was kind of the impetus for this new initiative where we, you know, work with both folks that we have existing connections to inside of the crypto sphere, as well as folks outside of crypto, and kind of introduce them to the world of NFTs, you know, similar to kind of what other projects have been doing as well. But give them kind of the OpenSea audience, the OpenSea community, and just kind of better engage our own users. I think a lot of our users are very hungry for new content and new exciting games and projects. But they don't always know like how to discover them, right?
Sure.
So we sent out an announcement in our first OpenSea newsletter. We've gotten a lot of interest from folks in our community, and then we'll also be reaching out beyond and hopefully having some folks who have like, you know, significant non-crypto audiences as well. Right. And it'll be interesting to see how those audiences react to NFTs. We're super excited.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. You know, obviously finding something or building a tool that allows you to focus or spotlight more of the people on your platform, so your users can see like, oh, that's a really cool thing. They may not have known about that unless they follow that artist specifically, or happen to like catch it in a feed or while they're browsing around or something.
I think
that's great. I love that. And I think that really helps drive home the fact that OpenSea is, you know, a part of our community, you know? And that's really what I love about crypto, and I love supporting. I love people like you who are doing great projects that are part of the community. You know, you're not some big multi-billionaire company that sees something like, I want to take advantage of this. And so they build something that because they know they can. And I know, so I love being able to support that. I love that you guys are pushing forward and really, you know, giving people what they want, giving people things that are interesting and kind of still on that cutting edge of what NFTs are doing here in the marketplace, and how people want to trade them and buy and sell and you know, actually discover some of these things as you guys are moving forward. So I think you guys are in a really great place with what you've built and the community that you kind of have around OpenSea. So, yeah. All right, Devin. Well, hey, man, I really had a great time chatting with you about OpenSea and the future of what NFTs on your guys' platform and scalability and just kind of your whole journey and stuff here. Before we get going, is there anything that maybe you wanted to tell the audience here, or last little nugget of wisdom you want to drop on us?
Let's see.
Or not, it's okay.
If you are watching this as like a creator, an artist, or just someone curious, this is often my nugget of wisdom is just that, you know, I would encourage everyone to, you know, try out a bunch of NFT products. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. And then if you are sort of a creative minded person who wants to create NFTs, it's relatively easy now to go and mint your own and just, you know, see what it's like. So I think that's the best way in my mind to like learn about the space.
Jump in. It requires
getting your hands a bit dirty, but I think there's a lot of opportunity right now in many different areas of the NFT space. In just being a user, there's a ton of really interesting stuff to explore. If you're creative, there's a lot of opportunity to kind of get your work out there and see what resonates with people. If you're a developer, there's opportunities to kind of push the cutting edge of what types of things people have tried with the various standards, and just so much uncharted territory, in my opinion. And lastly, if you're an entrepreneur, I think, it's not the same kind of environment as it was in 2017, but I do think that there's like really ripe opportunities to build, big companies that last long, long after kind of specific crypto market tides into the future. And like, do really interesting things. I think across the board, it's just a really fun, fun ecosystem to get deeper involved in.
Yeah, the opportunity abounds, and you know, that's one of the things I really do love about crypto in general. You know, we share that kind of same passion. You know, I'm on multiple sides. So I'm on the development side, I'm on the creative side, I'm on, you know, and so it's great to be able to have, and obviously the user side, like I'm a collector, I have tons of, I mean, I've been collecting NFTs since when they, like, we're, you know, like we're really just getting started and stuff. And so it's great to see, you know, how far things have come, but yeah, there's so much opportunity there. And I love that OpenSea, you know, really gives you guys, it gives people a platform to really take in a lot of that opportunity to be able to buy, sell without kind of limits, do it decentralized, and you know, have some really cool tools at their disposal, whether they're a developer or a creator themselves. So great, man. Yeah. Well, I definitely look forward to OpenSea drops coming and seeing some more great releases from you guys. But once again, Devin, thank you for joining me here on my Stash My Crypto podcast. That's all I have for today, folks. Until next time, stash that crypto, friends.